freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says? No, he's not a friend.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Oh, phew. Thank God. We still have the same open. I wasn't sure what we were going to get. All of a sudden, our Brock and Salk intro during the show, Brock, during Mike's my morning show, has like a whole new intro with new sound.
Call it the Mike Salk show.
During the Mike Salk show. And it just kind of, I was surprised that anybody still remembered that existed. Howdy apparently just done a whole new intro for it. Pinky in the brain and everything. Where did that come from?
How did that even happen?
I don't know. It appeared one day. And you know what somebody immediately said on the text machine was, oh yeah, bronze and brain with Brock's bronze and Brock's brains and Salk just there to screw it all up. So thanks a lot, Howdy. You set me up for great success on my own show. Really appreciate it. I thought I had maybe shed the whole like Brock carrying me around being Brock's caddy thing, but no. Mm-mm. You just found a way to like remind people of it. So thanks. Really appreciate that. This is on you.
I can't believe somebody would text
who
that.
Would do
that's
that?
Right.
That's crazy.
A text from a 425 do that?
Yeah, I should go back and check.
Was that Howdy's handiwork?
That's weird.
You still doing that stuff, Howdy? You still doing that sound stuff?
Yeah.
Are we going to talk about Russell Wilson or something? We have to talk about Mike being no bronze, no brains.
Well, I don't see why we can't do both. It's a podcast. Like, do kind of whatever we
Doug
want.
Doug Baldwin going to host this show now? We're going to the Mike Salk No Brains, No Bronze show. Talk about Russell Wilson.
Do you see that picture, by the way, of the 12-man flag when Bennett raised it?
Yeah.
With Doug up there and crew.
Cliff
could probably go on that field and play.
Yeah.
He could absolutely go out there and play. Jermaine, maybe a different position, maybe a little H tight end. Doug kind of just looked like an old man. He's gone from player mode to he just dad mode. He looked like dad up there. Not big, not heavy, not anything like that. But at least the picture I saw, I'm like, Doug has transitioned to dad mode. Full dad mode.
What do you think he's thinking watching the Seahawks right now? I mean, like, I said it a week ago when the offense was so bad, that game against Washington where they just couldn't function. I was like, God, can you just imagine Doug Baldwin and Richard Sherman's text thread right now? That didn't come out well. Their text thread right now. It must just be like, yep, of course.
Shocker.
Been saying this for a decade. Like, well, yeah, you said it wasn't true then. Eventually it became true. Can you imagine? Like, what do you think Doug thinks as he's watching all this?
I think he puts it on the new supporting cast not being as good.
I don't think so. I bet he doesn't.
You think he puts it on Pete? Pete's messaging is tiring him?
No, I don't think he does.
Well, we got to watch Russ play his best game of the year. I mean, we got to watch Russ.
I don't know what that says.
Throw for three. He should have thrown for three touchdowns and, knucklehead and another one go off his hands for a pick. Like, that looked like vintage Russ, right? I mean, that was.
No, it didn't.
It didn't look like vintage Russ?
No.
It didn't. Really?
It was good.
Vintage Russ, he would have been running around.
Right.
He would have been making plays.
It was a good game, and you're right. It was the best game he's played since probably week one this year. But
you're
I didn't think it looked like
Russ.
Vintage Russ.
You're down on Russ.
I love
you?
Russ, but that didn't look like what I love about Russ. It looked good.
His deep balls? Even the little flea flicker, 60 yards down the field to the only spot that Tyler could have possibly caught that?
How about the like fade ball that was out of bounds and another one that was out of bounds? Like, it was good. I'm not saying he wasn't good.
30-36?
Dude, he was good.
Yeah.
He was definitely good. And you're right. If Gerald Everett helps him out, he's got two more touchdown passes. And, that was a rough day for poor Gerald. But I thought it was good. I didn't think that looked like vintage Russ. I think it showed beyond a shadow of a doubt that he couldn't have hurt his team more by coming back a month early from this injury, trying to prove that he's God or whatever.
Right.
Like he screwed them.
Because Geno would have been better.
Based on the numbers, he would have been.
No.
No.
Russell was.
No.
Well, based on the numbers.
Geno would have been more competitive.
Based on
against
the numbers.
Green Bay, they didn't score a point.
Right. Based on the numbers, Brock, how many points per game did they average while Russ was during his 3 weeks of not being able to play?
I know. I saw you tweet this less than 10.
Fewer than 9 points a game, and he was a 55% passer. Yeah, Geno was like a 68% passer at least when he was in there. I don't think much of Geno Smith as a quarterback. He seems like a good guy. I don't think much of Geno as a quarterback in the NFL, but 55% passing?
That was, refresh my memory, that was at Green Bay. Who else was it?
It was against Washington and against a beat-up Arizona team.
Right. And you think Gino would have given you a better opportunity to win in those games?
Are you like taking notes on that?
Yeah, I can hear your Sharpie.
Are you? Yep. You have your various color. What color Sharpie did you use?
That's a red Sharpie.
Was that red Sharpie?
Got a new.
He doesn't know. I don't know why we're asking.
No.
He doesn't even know what color Sharpies they are.
Watch your mouth. I know black. This is a black Sharpie. I was in my drawer, my desk here. We were all watching our company meeting, and I looked in my drawer. I'm like, oh, this is a bonus. I've got my legal pad out, and I still have some Sharpies that I did not open this season on the College Football Road. So I'm going to pull out this black Sharpie on my notepad, and I'm going to take notes, just as I did during our hour meeting. I'm going to continue with my notes. There is no chance in the world Geno Smith gave you a better opportunity to beat Green Bay, Washington, or Arizona than, yes, even a less than 100% Russell Wilson.
You sure about that?
I'm 100%
sure. How could the offense have been worse in Green Bay?
Did you watch? I mean, Geno played.
Green Bay, they were worse against. I know they scored more points. They were worse against Washington than they were against Green Bay.
How did Geno play?
They didn't score a point in Green Bay. That's how bad they were. In two of the three games, Brock, they weren't even functional, and Arizona was not better. I'm sorry. I get that Russ wanted to come back. I wasn't critical of him at the time because I understand, like, I wanted to see it just like everybody else.
Dr. Shin had told us that it was remarkable.
Dr. Shill. Yes, I totally agree. He came out and told us what we needed to hear. But Brock, he wasn't ready. He was, as it turned out, guess how long the injury took to come back from? 8 weeks. Took 8 weeks. Not 4 weeks. 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And because Russ wanted to prove to the world that he's different from other normal mortal humans, it didn't work. He's not. He didn't play through it. I mean, he was physically capable of it because he has a fantastic tolerance for pain. But mm-hmm. that was not what was at stake here. This was not about pain tolerance. This was about an ability to throw a football, which he could not do until 8 weeks. With a normal Russell Wilson ability level.
He couldn't do it consistently. And now Geno Smith, even with his mallet finger, he throws it better than Geno. I'm sorry. Geno can't play. Geno's not a starter in this league. Geno's a backup in this league and was exposed for that. He played one good game.
So what if you had gone out and got somebody else? How about just since he's got a lot of local ties and played awfully well this week,
what if they had
Gardner Minshew for those 6 weeks? You don't think they could have done better than 1-5 with Gardner Minshew against those teams?
Could have.
I think they could have. Russell had, from the beginning, rather than trying to pretend that he's different from everyone else, had just, okay, I'm out 8 weeks. I'm going to miss 6 games, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they knew that, rather than thinking he was going to be out 3 and we don't know and do you make a deal? No, you're going to be out for 6 games. We're going to need to make a move. And they went out and they acquired Gardner Minshew or whomever it would have been. You don't think that they could have done better than 1-5?
Not whomever.
Well, I don't know who is.
There's a lot of leftover whomevers. No. Gardner's a good player. They could have made that move in the offseason, as Philly did, as a security blanket for Jalen Hurts, who, you know, I think has some challenges to be a starting QB in this league, and then Gardner goes in there.
Okay, but they could have dealt a sixth-round pick to Philly for Gardner Minshew at that point.
In season? No, yes. They're still a viable playoff contender, and they know what they have in Gardner Minshew.
No.
I bet you.
No.
Oh, absolutely.
They'd take whatever you could give them for Gardner Minshew. Totally
in
disagree
season?
With you.
Absolutely
yes.
not.
In season.
Totally,
Gardner Minshew
absolutely
is
not.
Rotting away.
Remember, I'm the brains and the brawn. Okay, Philly was not going to trade Gardner Minshew. They were waiting for their opportunity to play him, and you watched.
Oh, yes, they were just waiting for it.
Gardner, I
couldn't disagree with you more on this.
Philly's got 3 first-round picks and Gardner Minshew. So, you know, talking the offseason, you know, maybe.
Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, man, if you had known that Russell Wilson was not going to be available for the amount of time that the injury actually took to heal from, and I know this is easy for me to say in retrospect. I get it. I was not saying this a few weeks ago. I will raise my hand and say this is revisionist history 101.
Yep.
But knowing what we know now, Russell was wrong and it hurt his team. And when it's all said and done, if you want to go through the sliding doors theory, if the overreaction occurs to the Seahawks record when it's all said and done, to whatever was exposed, quote unquote, during the time without Russ, and it does end up leading to changes with the head coach, with the general manager, or with the quarterback, That will be in large part because Russell Wilson decided to come back before he was ready in order to prove physics don't apply to him.
But it's not on Russell Wilson to keep himself out of
games. No, it is not.
He's a competitor. He's going to try to get in at every turn.
Thank you, Kyle. Did you just see, am I on Zoom? Did you just read my notes or something? Because I just had written that down as you were speaking. Russell was not wrong. Russell's job as a competitor is to come back and force the issue and say, I'm ready to go. It is the Pete Carroll's job. It is the team's job to then protect him against himself. Something you say all the time, that the league has to protect teams against themselves. Teams have to protect players against themselves, because, you know, I think it's quite admirable, especially as a $35 million guy on a team that struggles with an O-line that's underperforming, with a run game that's a mess, that in a defense at that point, 3-4 weeks ago, that was, you know, giving up yards hand over fist. And you know, Russell's going to say, yep, I'll come back early. I'm going to do whatever it takes, 17 hours a day.
It did not,
whether that's his,
like,
hubris or his ego or whatever, for whatever his purposes are, Russell wasn't wrong to force that issue. And it was then incumbent upon Pete and that crew to see, to watch practice and say, I'm sorry, we're going to hold you back. We're going to look out for your best interest, actually, and our teams, in our opinion, if they shared the same opinion you do. But obviously they did not. And they said even a compromised Russell is going to be better than Geno Smith.
I disagree with you.
I know you do.
But I don't have a good argument. I'll be honest. Like, I don't have a good argument as to why I think that you're wrong there and why I would blame Russ more than Pete. I agree with you. You made a good point, but I disagree.
Well, I just did it on the shoulders of Kyle, so thank you.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you for standing on Kyle's very tall.
Well, we saw Brandon Staley do it this weekend. Bosa left the field in concussion protocol. He got cleared to return, and Staley said, I know you're cleared. However, I'm not going to put you back out there.
Yeah, and maybe that's what should have happened. But I do think that there's like a, with everything else hanging over the Russ-Pete relationship and all that, I don't know that there was a legitimate possibility of holding Russ back once he said he was ready to go. And with everything Russ had put into this, like, weird fantasy of being better than everybody else,
he had a lot riding on this.
He did. He did. His whole credibility was riding on this.
He had the Hippocratic Oath riding on this.
Whatever that means these days. And so I don't know. I get what you're saying, but I don't know that I actually think that's the way it works.
Well, I also know this. Tony Romo was astute in that first game. First game back was Green Bay, correct? In that first game back, of just saying, you know, there's really nothing you can do. You just got to get back into the mode and play. There's nothing you're going to replicate in practice. You're not doing good on good. They're not in pads. The speed of practice is nothing like the game. And when you're, you know, out for a month and a half, like, you just got to get back into the fire. And it's going to take you, you know, some time to get your timing and to get your trust and to get all of that back. And, oh, by the way, again, this isn't a totally new system for him, a system with a first-time play caller. I thought Shane Waldron called by far his best game. And, you know, is it the chicken or the egg? Did it help that Russell, you know, hit some things and got the ball out? And did it help that, you know, there was some separation and some guys winning? Sure. But I thought Shane Waldron himself got into really good rhythm. I thought it was
in the last game here.
Absolutely.
San Francisco.
Yeah. Yes. That it was, there's no way we're going to block these guys, especially in the first half.
They never did.
And Jake Curran, like, we're not going to be able to, and then the tackle goes down. Like, we're not going to be able to block them. So, Russ, the ball is coming out of your hand. Yeah. And I know it's a little bubble screen. I know it's a little quick screen. I know it's a little quick slant. I know it's a three and out, but, you know, we're going to, as best we can, and we are going to move you, and you're going to run sprint right option, and you're going to play some deep play action where you can at least create some buffer between you and this pretty ferocious Russ. And even with that, he still got hit and sacked a bunch, but by and large, it was both of their best games.
Does that give you some hope that when they take on the Rams next time that they'll be able to function?
I think a little bit. I don't know who will be in front. If Jake Curran is still the left tackle, that's tremendously problematic, right? I don't know how long Shell's shoulder is going to bother him. If Damian Lewis looks like he may come back, he's banged up.
But the idea of what, if I understand you properly, is it almost doesn't matter who's in front there. They're not going to be able to block. They've never been able to block the Rams' front line.
Nope.
So as long as that's the case, then don't you just use the same game plan where it almost doesn't matter who's on the front for you?
I mean, to a degree. Obviously, then they sit. Now, you were also helped because San Francisco was as compromised in their secondary as you were in their line. So they didn't want to put those guys and backups to backups in press man and, you know, in those situations. So there was cushion, right? There were opportunities to get the ball out. So at least your ailment was aided by their ailment. I don't know if that will be the case when Jalen Ramsey's up in press coverage.
Good point.
Yeah, doing what they're capable of doing.
And yet somehow the Niners manage to take it to the Rams every time. So
And somehow the Seahawks take it to the 49ers every single time.
And then the Rams will just take it right back to the Seahawks. It just seems to be this killer triangle in the NFC West that right now, no one's benefiting more than the Cardinals.
Correct.
Who are just sort of sitting pretty doing their own thing and sort of the class of not just the division, but the league as it stands today. It is interesting, as bad as things are, I know it sounds, you can really start writing a really quick script on the Seahawks as down and out as they looked at 3-8 of like, okay, you're 4-8, right? There's a seventh playoff spot now this year, and you just beat the Niners. You're going to play three games against three of the worst teams you could think of in Chicago, Detroit, and Houston. If you lose any of those games, you don't deserve anything. I mean, like, just you should go home in shame and, like, yeah, just. But so, like, you shouldn't lose any of those three games. And then you're really just talking about two games against your division rivals, the Rams and Cardinals. And if you can split with the Rams and Cardinals for the season, you go undefeated the rest of the year. You're 10-9 or 9-8. You're 9-8.
You're 4-8 right now, right?
If you win out, you are 9-8.
He's saying if you split on the season.
On the season. Yes, not
LA.
Those two games. Yeah. Okay. But even if you split those two games winning them, if you win four out of your next five,
you're in the playoffs.
Can you get into the playoffs at 8-9?
There are 3 6-win teams right now.
You're probably in the playoffs at 8.
Ain't dead yet.
You're probably in the playoffs at 8-9, and that's not out of the realm of possibility at all. Well, I can't believe I'm saying that out loud.
If they couldn't beat the Colt McCoy Cardinals at home, right.
But they're better now.
Can they?
They're totally better.
I'm not saying they're totally better now, but they at least have a quarterback that's an NFL quarterback instead of a shell of one. I mean, the game they played four halves against the Cardinals and the Rams. In three of those four halves, they didn't have their quarterback. So I'm not saying they can beat them. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying they can beat win both games. I'm not even saying they can split those games. Heck, I'm not even 100% sure they can beat those three sisters of the poor that they have to play.
Correct.
But if they do hold serve and beat Chicago, Detroit, and Houston, God, if they don't beat Houston, dear Lord. Whew. But if you don't beat those three teams.
Detroit?
I actually think Houston's worse than Detroit.
Yeah, it's probably true.
I think Houston's a worse team and a more embarrassing loss.
I'm telling you right now, if Davis Mills in the first quarter on Sunday, if he's starting,
he is,
and he's like 7 of 8, I am texting you and I'm throwing my phone into the ocean. If they let him just have completion after completion after completion, and we'll just rush for and won't get anywhere near him, and we'll have open guys, and we'll go up, oh, but we'll hold him to field goals.
He's like Max Hall, isn't he? Like, that guy can't play.
If they go about that philosophy and they let him feel good about himself, just like the Huskies did, Jimmy Lake was 0-2 against Davis Mills, because it's the same, like, oh, yeah, we'll just bend and bend and bend and bend, and he can be on the field all game, and he'll make a play here and there, but here's completion. Hey, there's completion. Oprah Winfrey. Hey, here, you have a completion, and another one, and another one, and another one. I'm telling you right now, if that happens Monday, I'm going to break my phone. I'm going to send you guys a group text, and I'm going to take a hammer to my phone.
I thought you were going to throw it in the ocean somewhere from the middle of the country. How is that going to happen? How many miles from the ocean do you live?
He's going to throw it over the mountains. What are you talking about?
Right, Uncle Rico. Then.
Like Uncle Rico. Oh, I don't know where it will land. It'll get up in this.
But it's going to make it to the ocean.
It's going to throw it in Salt Lake.
Salt water, not good. It's not good for that. No. I'll tell you what.
I'm going to lose.
iPhone can withstand a lot, but salt water.
I feel bad for Brock because he's going to do that. They gave those kinds of things up when they were good. God. Like, that's a certainty.
Well, and they're still going to beat them, even if that happens. So, whatever.
Michael Bennett, Richard Sherman gave that up every week. Yeah, that's going to happen.
As weird as it is, Seahawks could absolutely still make the playoffs this year. And you're telling me that if that happens back from the dead, that Jody Allen's going to look at it and say this team won, let's say at that point, it's 6 out of 7? To make the playoffs while dealing with the fact that their quarterback missed 3.5 games and wasn't himself for 3 more, that she's going to come out and fire somebody? Pete Carroll? That's nonsense.
Of course not.
That is abject nonsense.
To win 6 of 7 is about a 6% chance. Not even that. They have a less than 10% chance for sure.
Really? Of winning their next five out of six?
To make the playoffs, I believe they're what, 6%?
That's not what I said. You think that they have a less than what, 6% chance of winning their five out of their next six?
Yes.
I got to tell you, man, I disagree with you. Yep. I'm not saying it's going to happen.
You're just disagreeing with my brains and brawn on the whole podcast.
Let me ask you who you're taking in each one of the. Are you taking the Seahawks over the Bears?
Texans? Yeah, it's a toss-up this weekend.
Stop that. Stop it. You stop that.
It is.
It is not.
It is a toss-up.
No, it
this
isn't.
Weekend.
No, yep. It isn't.
What's the line? What is even
I don't
the spread?
Care what the line is.
Favorite?
I'm asking you.
No way the Texans are favored.
Stop it. You are being just needlessly combative. You were trying to...
Okay, I will take the Seahawks this weekend. This one I probably feel the best about. But Davis Mills, probably going to throw for 330 like Schottner 2 years ago.
Did I say, will the Seahawks give up 330 yards? I asked whether or not they'd win against the lowly Texans.
This one they can win.
Did they beat Detroit? Stop it!
At home?
Dude!
Is that at home?
I don't know where it is. Who cares?
It better be at home.
It could be at Memorial Stadium. They should beat the Detroit Lions.
They should beat Detroit. I'll give you those two.
All right. How about Chicago? Chicago doesn't have a quarterback. They don't have any idea what to do with it.
Is this the order that the games go?
No! Okay, thank you. Who cares? Do you think they beat Chicago?
Barely.
Is that a bear joke?
Yep.
All right. I'll buy that one. I like a good bear joke. All right. That one's fine with me. Okay. So now
they're not beating the Rams.
Brock.
They're not beating the Rams,
so
and they're not beating the Cardinals
games.
On the road.
They've
they're
won
not beating
three
them.
Games.
Not beating them.
And you're telling me that they have a 6% chance of splitting NFL games? What are you, John Clayton talking about Tim Tebow? Of course they got a chance to win those games.
So that'd be 4 out of 5. You told me, what did you
well,
say?
They've already won one.
Oh, you're putting this last one already into that mix.
Yeah, because that's how many you'd be winning in a row.
Okay, so 5 out of 6. Okay, maybe it bumps up a little bit from 6%. Maybe it's 20%.
20% is a lot. What a big jump.
5 out of 6, 20%. Because, yes, they should beat those three lowly teams. And then
split against the other two?
Yeah, as I said, about 20% chance.
No, you said it was a 6% chance. But now you're a little revisionist history.
I'm coming up, since you already included the San Fran win. I didn't do that in my calculations.
Oh,
okay? I'm sorry. That's where my error was. I bumped up from 6 to 20%.
All right. Well, that's a lot. And I might even go a little higher than that. I might go 20, 30%. And that, to me, is like, if you do all of those things, that's remarkable. And if you don't quite get there... I think it's hard for Jody Allen to come in and start making major sweeping changes, as Peter King suggested, as Mike Garofalo suggested this past week, based on a season coming like last year.
So if you get to 7-10, if you don't beat either of those teams, you don't beat the Rams or the Cardinals, who are, let's face it, right now, with your injuries and your situation and your roster, those rosters are better than yours. They were better going into the season, and they are, as we sit here today, that could change. Kyler could be a hamstring away or another ankle away, or he's proven to be, not durable and play every single game. And obviously, Stafford could get banged up. He gets hurt quite often.
Has been banged up, and they are not playing great football.
Correct. So, 7-10, keep the whole band together?
Yeah, I am. I'll be clear, I am. And I'm not doing that with no repercussions. I'm not just sitting there saying everything's fine, everything is awesome, plural the music from the Lego movie. I'm just saying that I don't need to make the changes at the top. A year removed from 12-4, coming off the most successful decade of football that this organization or any organization in Seattle has ever had. And because of a year in which the quarterback was not himself or missed 6.5 games, and you still come, a game or two short of the playoffs? Yeah, I'm going to provide for a little bit of grace. And I'm going to make sure that all of them figure out how to get it right. And my answer, I would use the Bill Belichick phrase. I've heard Matt Hasselbeck say it. I've heard you say it, Brock. Do your job. Hey, Russ, your job is to be the quarterback, not the offensive coordinator, not the head coach, not the general manager, not the spokesman for the team, not PR, not the videographer. You are the quarterback. Please go work on playing that to the best of your ability, not the physical therapist or the trainer. Go be the quarterback and maybe take a sleep study. And Pete, your job is to be the head coach, not the general manager, not this, not that, not the coordinator. Hire the right people to be the coordinators if there's a problem with the scheme and make that work. I need you to be the head coach. And John, I need you to pick better players. I need guys on this team with good contracts that are not going to put me at a disadvantage every week. And everybody do your own job without trying to influence anyone else's job. And I'll see what happens, because I'll take my chances with these three. I think they're all pretty good at their job.
So here's the challenge, I think, within this. And here's why I think Garofalo and Peter King and those guys, Garofalo and Peter King, come out kind of with their sentiment this week. I understand all that, and, it makes a ton of sense. And that sounds and even feels palatable. I think herein is the challenge. Because what lies ahead, Mike, you then have to entrust them with a massive salary cap room. Right, you may not have draft picks, but you can reshape this roster as New England did. New England totally transformed and totally reshaped their entire roster with spending how many hundreds of millions of dollars, right, for Robert Kraft in guarantees over the length of those contracts to players like Matthew Judon? Does Jody Allen and Burt Cold and Chuck Arnold and does that crew trust that Pete can sit and just do your job and not meddle with scouting? Do they trust that scouting can do their job? Because the track record, as Mina Kimes laid out over the last couple weeks, is a bit daunting and challenging. You know, ultimately, Jen Cohen in Washington said, Jimmy, you've coached just 13 games, and it's not even those 13 games that we've got to move on from you. It's that we don't trust you can get this right. Right? We don't, it's not even the rear view. It's not even this difficult season. It's not even those 13 games. For Pete, if you guys go 7-10, you're right. You're going to build some momentum. Ultimately, guys are going to play pretty well down the stretch. But ultimately,
I think this is a totally different situation.
I think this is where Peter King comes in. I think this is where these whispers come, is do they trust that Pete can stay in his lane as head coach?
Well, that's a different conversation.
Do they trust that John Schneider can stay in his lane and do that job well?
That is something that would need to be determined through conversation with Pete. That's very different from Jimmy Lake. Jimmy Lake was fired because he lost the room. You don't have the room. You can't lead a group of people that don't want you to lead them. You're out. You can't do this. You can't lead after you hit a kid. You can't do that. You're out. You can't. You'd embarrass the organization, and you are no longer fit to be the leader of that group. Pete hasn't lost the locker room.
He
quite
didn't
the
hit
opposite
a kid.
Of
he
it.
He shoved a kid, and that was not the factor. The factor
keep,
that went into
when I think
it
of
they
it, all I think of is
they didn't
in Die
him.
Hard, where the guy said, I shot a kid. Like that's all I think of is Al and I shot a kid. Whoa. That's all I think.
Oh, it
of
must
when
be Christmas
that.
Season because Die Hard comes to mind.
All right, I think it comes. I think it would say it comes to my mind any time right. of year. But Jimmy Lake couldn't be the leader of that team anymore. He'd lost. They had no faith.
He lost.
He
coaches.
Couldn't recruit.
He lost recruits. Right. He lost a lot of people. They
he
didn't
hasn't
trust
lost anybody,
and they didn't trust that he could get it right. They didn't trust that he could make the changes either with himself and with his staff and with everybody else to improve and learn on the job. They didn't trust him.
You just said that the Seahawks had their best game of the year. They played as hard as they possibly could.
Yep.
And if they do actually come out and win, as we just said, even five of their next six or four of the next, like Brock, you can make a pretty strong argument. They didn't give up at all.
So and if Hasselbeck told you this on Wednesday morning, they're throwing throwback passes, fake
right?
punts. This isn't a team that's thrown in the towel.
Not even close.
They're fighting.
They're so busy trying to win, they're willing to sign Adrian Peterson, which just drives me crazy, but okay. It did send a message. So I don't buy that you're going to move on from Pete. If the one person who doesn't want to be led by him is Russ, then you better have a conversation with Russ.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, man, everyone else is on board here. You better figure it out because guess what? You're under contract, too, for two more years and as long as we want you with the franchise tag for three more.
Yep.
So everybody's here for 5 years. Sorry. Go figure it out. If I'm Jody Allen, you don't have to make moves. You can lay down a different ultimatum, which is, hey, you boys better figure out how to play nice in the sandbox.
Okay. So that's the rosy side of it. Okay, that's a positive
as usual,
spin.
That's what I'm going
to
give you.
That's what you are. And if they were to lose to Detroit, if they were to lose to Houston.
Well, if that happens.
If they were to lose some of these situations, instead of 7-10 or 8-9 and feeling good about it, if all of a sudden, you know, you are 6-11. This conversation probably changes.
It probably does, but it will not be because of the record. It will be because of what happened in those games. If you lose to Chicago or Detroit or Houston, it'll be because your efforts stunk, because you didn't play.
Or you just don't have any talent up front to block.
But you have enough talent to block those. You can say what you want. You have
and
enough
you can't
talent
get home, and you can't get home defensively.
But you have enough talent to beat those three teams. You know that.
You better.
You do.
Yeah, well, you better.
Well, but you do. You have enough talent. If you and I don't think they're very talented. I think they have a talent gap. But come on. Those teams are a disaster.
But if Stone Forsythe and Jake Curran are starting a bunch of these games, Mike, it's going to be very difficult to function on offense.
But also, are you judging Pete Carroll and John Schneider off a game with Stone Forsythe and Jake Curran? Like, they didn't design this team to have those guys out there. It just went
that way. No, but they did make some mistakes in designing the team that led to that.
Yeah, well, Jake Curran's your third string right tackle right, who's playing left guard.
But he's also doing that because Jamarco Jones has been hurt every year of his career.
And Phil Haynes is a healthy scratch.
I mean, like, there are...
I mean, Phil Haynes got a big old back.
Yeah, well, he's got a big old back on the not playing list. I mean, like,
John Schneider said on the pregame show 2 weeks ago that they've been dying to get him active for a game. Yeah, they're really excited about Phil Haynes, about Penny Hart,
right.
And there was a third... It was like Gavin Heslop, I think.
Yeah.
He was like, we've been waiting to get these guys a chance. I was driving home and I thought, it's over. Like, when I hear you on the pregame show talking about, I've been waiting to get Phil Haynes up, stick a fork in him.
My friend Jess.
And he was a healthy inactive this week, by the way.
Oh, yeah. They didn't like what they saw.
That's why Jake Curran was even in there, because they didn't even want Phil Haynes to play.
No.
My friend Jess had recommended this old comedy, it's a few years old, that's actually really funny, called Happy Endings. Have you ever seen it?
Hmm.
Really funny. It was on ABC for a while. You can watch it on Netflix. It's pretty funny show.
Okay, right? Yeah.
It's a show about this couple that was about to
Robert
get married.
Kraft.
No.
My bad.
Not a documentary.
They're about to get married, and she walks away from it. It's about these five friends that live in Chicago. But the woman on the show, her name is Penny Hart.
No.
Totally blew me away as I was watching. I started dying with laughter when I put it all together that her name was Penny Hart. Anyway, Brock, it's a holiday time, and Famous Dave's barbecue holiday BOGO is back. You know what BOGO means?
Buy one, get one.
That's exactly right. Kudos to you. This year, when you feed your family in the festive season with Famous Dave's turkey dinners, you're going to be feeding another family in need as well. So for every turkey dinner you purchase, Famous Dave's will be donating one on your behalf to a local food bank this holiday season. They're taking pre-orders now at FamousDaves.com. Would you like to know what dinners include? Anybody?
Yes, please.
Yes.
Okay. Whole hickory smoked turkey feast. So that includes the whole hickory smoked turkey. You like hickory smoked? That sounds pretty good.
Yes. Very nice.
Slow smoked over hickory wood for 3 hours and then rubbed with a holiday blend of spices. Cornbread stuffing?
Mm.
How do we feel about cornbread stuffing? Anybody?
Very nice. The best stuffing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, why have regular bread? You have cornbread.
I'd say it's number two. I like a traditional stuffing. Cornbread's up there. I like a good cornbread stuffing. You get 3 quarts of that. Garlic red skin mashed potatoes, 3 quarts of that. Dave's cheesy mac and cheese, 3 more quarts there. And then this is why, 15 cornbread muffins, Kyle. That's going to feed 12 to 15 people for only $159. Or you can go a la carte, just the whole hickory smoked turkey. That'll feed 12 to 15 for only $89. Sliced hickory smoked turkey, family style feast available as well. A couple sizes there. And it's got all the same stuff. You're going to go find all the details. Celebrate the holidays famously. Pre-order now at FamousDaves.com. You surprised me a little bit, Brock, in our conversation that we had Wednesday morning as I was just asking you about Jamal Adams. Or I don't even think I went there. I was just asking you what you knew, what you were confident in the Seahawks. It kind of allowed you to go in any direction.
Mm-hmm.
And when I asked you what you knew about the Seahawks so far this year, you said?
The Jamal Adams trade is a disaster. And I think I would even take it a little step further here on this podcast and say of the three major trades... And you'll probably disagree. You've been in a disagreeable mood with me all podcast long, and that's fine because it's both my brains and my brawn. But I think of the Percy, Jimmy, and Jamal. I think Jamal is going to go down as the worst trade.
All right, so let's rank those quickly. Very clearly, the best of the three is Percy, right?
Won a Super Bowl.
Won a Super Bowl, and he contributed to it.
Is it?
Yeah, very clearly.
Jimmy, he was here for a year?
He was here for a year or two.
I mean, Jimmy
came
Graham
back the next
was
year.
Here
Hold
for-
on. He was here for a year or two. He ran back a kick to ice the Super Bowl. Would you have won it anyway? Probably. But he answered, there is no doubt, once he ran that ball back that you were going, the Super Bowl was over. He had won it. That was it. And you only gave up one 32nd pick in the draft in order to get him.
Yeah.
So I would say, based on what you gave up versus what you got, a Super Bowl win,
What, 2 games that season?
But in one of them was the Super Bowl, and he ran back a kick.
If without it, they went 36-8.
Maybe. Or maybe Denver
remember,
has hope, and the game is a little bit different.
Lord have mercy, we got Percy.
That's exactly right. He gave us two games.
He bookended it.
All right. So,
and you didn't give up much and it didn't limit Golden and
you gave
Doug
up a first round pick
and Doug and Jermaine, and it did not limit any other. In fact, in some ways, probably empowered and infused them with more rage and more anger to play better.
With Jimmy Graham, you got Jimmy Graham, who's a good player.
He played three seasons for Seattle,
but he also completely took you out of what you were trying to do in terms of your identity. Well, you lost.
I mean, Pete Carroll's capable of doing that with any player.
That's true.
It's not just Jimmy Graham.
But Jimmy Graham specifically, you said you want to be a physical run-first football team and then got a finesse tight end, of all things.
That's very true.
It doesn't make any sense. You gave up a first-round pick for him, and you gave up Max Unger in the deal.
Correct.
In order to get back a fifth-round pick, which I know they sort of viewed as separate deals, but not only were they wrong, Max Unger did have a lot left on his
there. That really stunk.
And they missed him. They never replaced him. They haven't had a center since then. So that's still the worst one, I think, for me. But
no, and also you're biased in that one because
what?
We found out about that move in Phoenix after eating all that chicken and waffles, and we were like obese and bloated. I think your wedding ring wouldn't come on or off, and we were just like, oh no, get us out. They did what? Like, oh no, get me a wheelchair.
That's that spot right by the airport.
Why did
right?
we need to get one more piece of fried chicken? Like, we'd already been pigs for a week. We didn't need that extra fried chicken.
Did you say you're biased or you're biased?
I think he got it right.
Did
he said biased. Yeah.
You're okay. biased against yes. it. You
oh, good.
Have
okay.
bias.
I have a bias against yes. it for sure. Well, that's fair. But also, when you factor in the Max Unger thing, they got that one just totally wrong. I think that's worse than
I do, too. In the loss of Unger, we can debate the identity and how much of a role and should that one move and everything else. There are other factors. But losing your mouthpiece, losing Max Unger, you could talk to people there privately. That was an enormous, enormous cost. And they could not fill it. They could not find that voice for years and years and years after. Jamal Adams, I think, has the opportunity to be worse than that. Two first rounders, could be this year a top 10 pick. We'll see how the rest of this unfolds. A lot of dollars. You empowered him to be a difference maker. You thought, as I said to you, you know, earlier this week on your show, you thought that he could come in and bring the juice, be the juice guy, have the energy and the edge. And when adversity hit, he ducked. He didn't take any responsibility, any criticism for some games.
Why do you say that? I don't know. I mean, I don't know that I felt that. I get some of his play and the issues out there, but I don't know that I feel like he's a ducker.
Well, I know that he, in games that he played terribly, he bolted out of the locker room. He did not talk to the media. He did not take responsibility. He did not say, ever, I played really poorly. I've got to get better. I've got to improve on this. Never took any of that responsibility. Nor, you know, now let's be clear, the Legion of Boom gave a pretty good, left a pretty good blueprint on how to do that, because mm-hmm. Richard never did it either. So I'm not saying, but he never,
didn't
most importantly, like Richard had years of equity, years of being the best corner in the game, years of winning a Super Bowl and getting you to the next one. And, you know, maybe unfairly, Jamal had to come in and try to carry that mantle of the bravado and the voice and the edge and the juice and everything else that Pete talked about with that trade and how important it was. And if you don't play and you can't play and play at a high level and be the best at your position, you can't carry that. And it falls silent. And you had to pay him $17 million and reset the safety market, you know, with the salary that's going to further complicate. And it did. As Quandre Dix sat out, you know, some of training camp, and now he's going to want his, and he deserves it. You know, frankly, if you were to say to me, who deserves a $17 million a year? I don't think he's a $17 million safety, but he's certainly much more deserving of it than Jamal is in his play that is highly limited and can't do a bunch of things. And if you surveyed and said to NFL people, okay, take the 32 safeties, strong safeties, you know, where's Jamal going to be on that list of 32? Not going to be in the top five. He's even in the top 10. And you gave up two first rounders and paid him and reset the market? That's a huge swing and miss.
I think there's no doubt that they are regretting that decision today. I think if you gave anybody truth serum in that building, they would say, yeah, if we could go back, we got that wrong. And I think Danny O'Neill, more than anybody, had it right after that deal got made. You remember Danny's comment that it was the first thing that they did that had the whiff of desperation?
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense. Like, you kind of track, why did you get to the Jamal Adams trade?
Yep.
Well, you can go through it. They lost some of those guys that brought the juice that you just mentioned, and unfortunately they felt like they needed to get that attitude back, and they didn't. They screwed up in the draft trying to figure out how they were going to replace the Legion of Boom, and arguably the two worst, well, I guess Malik McDowell's so bad, and Penny's bad, and Fetty's bad, but two of the worst picks of this era are Tedrick Thompson and Lano Hill. I mean, thankfully they're third and fourth rounders,
right,
rather than being right at the top, but both guys were complete, I mean, neither guy could play.
Correct.
And so why
the
did you
baby boomers?
Huh? Yeah,
Mike
exactly.
Tyson in the gang?
Yes, and Shaquille. But eventually, like, you needed to figure that out. And so why did they get to that point? Well, because of other mistakes made in the draft and elsewhere, mm-hmm, you eventually had to go do that with Jamal Adams, or so you thought. And you felt like you were close enough that the draft picks wouldn't matter. And if they finish this year, either in the playoffs or just outside of it, it'll hurt a little bit to have a mid-first-round pick, right? The 15th, 16th pick in the draft. That would be a bummer. But if it's the top five pick in the draft, that's a different story.
Especially
that,
if,
that would.
And by the way, hold
the
on. And if they do that, but by the way, if they do that with the news from this week, if they do that and they go on that run and they find themselves as an 8-win team, they will have done that without him. Because he ain't playing the rest of the year,
right?
With tearing his labrum
again. I don't
again.
Think he's played nearly as badly as you do, especially in the last few games. I mean, he's come up with a few interceptions. He's been in the middle of a lot of things. Like,
he had a terrible half against San Fran. I don't know what play he tore his labrum on, but he couldn't tackle. I wonder if it was when he was diving for Kittle or whomever down the side. Like, he played a real bad half and, you know, got beaten coverage again, and his liability in coverage that you can't play man coverage with. And yes, he's pretty good around the box in the run game, but there's a reason that, you know, that what the sacks go from 9 to
0.
1?
Zero. I don't think
zero.
Zero. Any. Yeah.
Zero.
Zero. Because people kind of got a beat on that, and yep, just put a body on him, and it's just so unfortunate. It is so unfortunate. I hate to paint this in such a dour and negative way, but that was because at the time, I don't think I liked it at the time. I was going to go back actually and look at my tweet that day. I could probably do that. I don't think I liked it.
You liked
him
though.
I liked him, but for a safety, for two first round picks, I loved his energy. I loved him out of college. And I think the Jets got his best years. And I think, unfortunately, the body is going to break down. This is the same injury, even more significant, on the shoulder they already repaired the first time. And so that brings longevity into serious, serious question of whether you can even get another year or two out of them. So I think in the scheme of things, as it stands now, that's, to me, worse than the Jimmy Graham.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Saul.
All right, Brock, let's finish off here with a little Blue 88, starting off with the Seahawks, and we'll move to some college. And I've not forgotten about Howdy. We were on the verge of a rant last week.
Oh, that's right.
We may sacrifice question number three and give it over to Howdy so that he can answer. But question number one, Daryl Taylor, I saw him make a play in space this week. Kind of seems like he's developing into an actual linebacker. He's leading the team in sacks. Is this the best Seahawks draft pick since Frank Clark? Since DK Metcalf?
Yeah, I think since DK. And I think there's some similarities to DK, you know, and when they, you know, the one thing that they do is they take risk in the draft, right? And Daryl Taylor was a risk. There are a lot of people that flagged him and did not clear him and would not draft him with some of the medical history in the background. And we saw that unfortunately come to light as he missed the entirety of his rookie year and had to get that leg right and everything else. And, you know, the Seahawks have taken a bunch of risks, a bunch of them blown up in their face. But this is one just from a physical trait standpoint, kind of like Frank. You know, Frank was an enormous risk off of the field, but you started to feel Frank's just physical traits, right? Those things they love to talk about in his presence. And, you know, Frank did not miss his rookie year. He flashed. And Daryl Taylor has done so much more than that this year, man. He has been impressive. When you just watch, and there's a reason that he's, you know, doubled everybody else in sack total. And what I like, Mike, is he's not just done it against the backups to the backups, right? This isn't like preseason where, oh, that's where you first flash when, you know, you get your welcome to the NFL moment. you know, he's doing it against some of the top dudes in the league. And I said to you this week on your show, D. Eskridge and him right now in my sights for the next 6 weeks, 7 weeks of this Seahawks season are going to be front and center. Because if Daryl can end this and against Detroit and against Chicago and in Houston this week, those are games he should absolutely, you know, make his presence known and maybe add another sack or two in those games. And if he gets around 7, 8, 9 sacks, that is a huge bonus moving into the years to come. And same with D. Eskridge, who finally, like, yes, good, getting the ball in space. And he finally showed why, again, they took a risk on him with very little route tree, very little high-level football, kind of bounced around positions a little bit in college, and they loved his physical traits. We felt both of them on Sunday. We have felt Daryl's over the course of the season, and we really need to feel them down the stretch over the final 6 weeks.
All right, question number two. Mario Cristobal speaking Spanish down in Miami as he takes on his new job. Who replaces him at Oregon, and what do you make of the last little iteration here of the coaching carousel?
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see if it's the final last one. Maybe after the early recruiting season, the guys get signed here in the next week and a half or so, whether it continues to crank up again. This was his dream job. I can't imagine anybody at Oregon. He handled it well. He went face-to-face with those players. He wanted to do that and tell them the situation. I don't think, and obviously, there weren't other jobs. Florida was not intriguing to him. Auburn the year before was not intriguing to him. He is going back to his home. I think for the ACC, it's as nearly as big a hire. It's not as big as Lincoln Riley to USC. But in trying to restore a brand, there certainly are some comps. USC did it, you know, more recently with Pete in the 2000s. It's been since really the 80s, 90s, and 01 since Miami has resonated on a national level. And I think more than anything else, Mike, I think Mario Cristobal could build them a stadium. I think your sister went to Miami, right?
She did, yep.
Yeah. That place has not been the same for a number of different...
Frank Gore. They're kind of friendly.
Yeah, nice. Were they? Oh, cool.
No.
Clinton Portis?
That place has not been the same for a number of different reasons. But once they bulldozed the Orange Bowl, the essence of that place left. And Mario Cristobal can come back and he will recruit incredibly. And he knows that place and they love him. And it's a wonderful fit. But the best news, if you're a Miami fan, for your sister as an alum, is that billionaire booster saying, we're going to build an on-campus stadium.
I really, did you read Bruce Feldman's article about this?
I did.
The whole point that he makes here, I'll just read a little of it. It's a Kane thing you wouldn't understand. This is more credo than motto. And Cristobal is the same guy who, as a young assistant, actually relished Miami's underwhelming and downright not good facilities.
Yep.
It wasn't hard to get him to rant about how they didn't want the kids who think they need all that fancy stuff to make them better. Jerome didn't need it. Michael Irvin didn't need it. Benny Blades didn't need it. Neither did Dan Morgan, Ed Reed, or Andre Johnson. They were dogs, he says. Hungry, hungry dogs. Why Miami? I played there, man, he said. Point to all the zippers on my body. How many times have I been opened up and closed up? It's different, man. Unless you've played at the University of Miami, you just don't know. Yep. I was fortunate to be a member of those teams.
And the gigantic
that kind
difference.
Of makes it sound awesome, doesn't it?
It does.
Let's go.
And wouldn't I think you? The gigantic difference, because you could read very similar, maybe not quite to that extent, but when Scott Frost took the job back in Nebraska 4 years ago, right? It was a similar, like, I am going home. I know what this means. I know the culture of this program.
Jim Harbaugh, Michigan.
Yes. The difference with Mario in South Florida is the recruiting compared to Lincoln, Nebraska. Ann Arbor, you've watched Jim actually recruit pretty well over the years. He just had to change his staff and get younger and do a lot of different things and innovate, in which they did. But for Mario Cristobal, he is going to have some dudes. And he doesn't have to drive more than 45 minutes to find most of his roster down in South Florida.
I love the idea of, like, we're going to recruit without all the big facility. You don't need that. You know what you need is to actually be good and, like, tough. And stop playing in these, like, fancy schmancy stadiums with their extra gear and the extra stuff they have. You don't need it. It's making them worse at football. It's a great recruiting tool.
The juxtaposition of Cristobal coming from Oregon.
Yes. Correct. I love it. I think it's so fast. Look, man, I've seen that. I've seen what all the money can buy. This is better, and this will make you a better football player. What a great speech. What a great recruiting sales pitch he's got. All right, question number three. All right, Brock, are you right? We said we would do this last week, so let's make sure we carve out a couple of minutes. Boy, howdy, sitting over there stewing for the last couple of weeks.
Hot. Howdy. This is a hot take. He's been sitting like a hemorrhoid what on do you- such a hot take here.
Like a gallstone. Howdy, what do you make of the Huskies' situation right now with Kalen DeBoer?
I am so embarrassed for the program that they would stoop to the level of being the most mediocre, average program that they could possibly make themselves into. It is a joke that the University of Washington would go from Chris Peterson to his chief disciple, I had no qualms about it at the time, to the head coach of Fresno State, who probably won't rank in the top half of head coaching salaries in the conference. That's the University of Washington? The University of Washington is going to roll out the head coach from Fresno State? That's their big get?
Is that so different from rolling out the offensive coordinator from USC?
Who's Sarkisian?
Yeah.
At least everyone wanted Sarkisian. The whole nation had penned Steve Sarkisian as this is the next guy. He is the up-and-comer. They got the choice of who they wanted in the next soup du jour in college football when it was Sark. That's what they got, and Sark said, it's this program over all the other major D1 colleges that had openings. The University of Washington didn't get Dave Aranda from Baylor. They didn't get Matt Campbell from Iowa. These are the next guys, the ascending coaches in the league that everybody wants. They got the head coach from Fresno State. This is ridiculous. The day that Jake Browning threw his last pass in the college football playoff was the high water mark of this program, and it may be for the next 20 years.
Wow. Brock?
So bad.
I'm going to counter that, and I'm going to say something bold myself.
You don't say.
I'm not going to make it about me. Okay, say it about me. This is about Brains and Brawn, Mike Saul.
Oh, me. Good.
And you're going to book it. Okay, you're going to book this. Okay. What is today? Wednesday, September 8th. You're going to bookmark this.
December 8th,
December 8th. Gosh, I should put my readers on. Wednesday, December 8th. Book this.
You need readers to know what month?
I do. Kalen DeBoer is going to be Mike Salk's favorite college coach since he arrived at the since he arrived at 710 ESPN.
Why?
Seattle. He's everything that you like. Tough. Super tough. He is authentic. Total non-phony. He's been a head coach and earned his stripes. Smaller levels. Won national titles. Obviously comes from Fresno State. He will do what he says, and he is not a fake. And I think Mike Salk is going to love. It's going to grow.
I appreciate that. And I will say that's very likely. So far, I like that he's not on social media. Like, I like a lot of the things about him.
You liked his press conference?
Yeah, I did. I like that people are following. I like that his assistant coordinator's following. This isn't a Brian Kelly situation where everyone's like, peace, dude. See you later. Like, people want, Jake Haener wants to come with him. You know, if Jake Haener coming here and he chooses Jake Haener over Sam Heward, I won't like that. I'll be very clear about it. But yeah, you might be right. What I would argue, though, Brock, is both of you can be right at the same time. Howdy can be right about what this says about where the program's at, and you can be right that I may very well love Kalen DeBoer and that he's the right hire for them at the time. Both of those things can be true at the same time.
And then when they win 8 or 9 games next year, Howdy's just going to have to eat it.
Well, he'll be happy to eat it. His team will be winning.
Yeah, they will be, but it'll be just like Mike Hopkins.
Oh, sure. You'll think that death is just around the corner.
It looks great. This is the end.
Yeah. Well, because he's going to have to recruit, and he'll be doing that with Jimmy Lake's guys, and Jimmy Lake can recruit. And I think there is a significant question about what Kalen DeBoer will do as a recruiter.
So. By the way, took a pretty good guy from the University of Michigan, by all accounts. I'm not in that world like Bruce Feldman and others are, but Courtney Morgan is director of football ops from the University of Michigan. Again, coming out because he knows the coaching chops of this guy. This guy's a pretty good coach. I'm not gonna wave the banner right now that he's Chris Peterson hire. Absolutely not. Chris Peterson was the best hire. I'm sorry, Howdy's the best hire. He won multiple Pac-10, Pac-12 championships. He took you to a national semifinal. He made you relevant. I'm not going to poo-poo that hire at the time, and even, unfortunately,
and this is not the name you want. I mean, you said Matt Campbell, Dave Aranda were the two names that you were most in on, so no revisionist history.
Nope.
But that doesn't mean this guy can't coach and that he's not. It's just that my feeling, and I think what Howdy would say is, cool, then you get him in 3 or 4 years after he's had success at Colorado.
Yep.
Right? Let somebody else determine whether or not that's real or whether or not there's a problem there. And if you are truly one of the top programs in the country, you can allow Kalen DeBoer to have success at Cal, at Colorado, at wherever, and then bring him here to Washington.
And if you're Washington,
you get that right.
And if you're Washington, you better hope he's Lorenzo Romar and not Mike Hopkins. Because Lorenzo Romar came with, the same, won the first choice, won the second choice, one third choice, kind of like Pete Carroll. When Pete Carroll went to USC. But, Lorenzo Romar came here, had experience as a head coach, which I think is incredibly, incredibly valuable. He's won other places. And I think, as I said, Mike Salk.
All right. I'm prepared to like it. I'm all in on
DeBoer fan.
You know what's crazy? We were talking, Heather and I were talking about this last night. The whole Bill Belichick winning a game with three passes is one of the most remarkable things I've ever seen.
Incredible.
And I am legitimately fascinated by the idea of a Patriots-Bucks Super Bowl. That would be the best storyline ever for a Super Bowl. It's just incredible.
That'd be a long 2 weeks.
It would be. It'd be brutal, but it would also be pretty awesome. The idea of Brady versus Belichick for all the marbles is just, it's out of control, pretty awesome for the game of football. But do you realize that the last coach before Bill Belichick in New England was Pete Carroll?
Crazy, right?
Isn't that bizarre?
Amazing.
Like, obviously, you know that's true. Like, I don't think I'm telling you anything you don't know. I mean, it's not like you think there's somebody else was coaching there. But say that out loud.
Yeah.
The last coach in New England before Bill Belichick took over in 2000 was Pete Carroll. Since then, Pete Carroll took some time off, wrote his book, had all of his success at USC, and has been here for 13 years. And Belichick's just doing his thing.
Nuts.
It really is a remarkable, and everything Pete's accomplished is gigantic. Belichick, the coach before Belichick in New England was Pete Carroll. That feels like eons ago.
Crazy.
Unbelievable. All right, we got to get out of here. This is a lot of fun. Fun podcast today. We will be back to do it again next week, and then I think we'll take a week off for the holiday. But looking forward to it, Brock. We'll see where we're at next week, and I'm getting ready for you to throw your phone somehow over mountains and into the ocean, which will be great, because then I won't get your sort of mean-spirited text that you send during games.
Great.
Until then, the hay
is in a barn.
Or the ocean. See you, everybody.
Get to the chopper!